Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and as we've been telling you, it's the first day of the UN General Assembly, which means gridlock both on the streets of Manhattan's East Side and attempts to clear up gridlock inside the UN building itself. As Secretary General Ban Ki-moon and President Obama just wrapped up their statements touching on Syria, Iran, and lots more. Gideon Rose, editor of Foreign Affairs magazine, is here to discuss whether we learned anything new in these speeches this morning. Hey, Gideon, thanks for joining us on Quick Diplomatic Turnaround.
Hi, Brian. Good to be here.
And let's play some highlights from the speeches. We'll start with President Obama, but then we'll also get to some wild tape of Brazilian President Dilma Rousseff laying into the U.S. for surveillance taking place in her country. Now, I'm not sure if you caught the moment when the leaders were reminded to keep their speeches to under 10 minutes, Obama spoke for almost an hour. I think the U.S. gets dispensation from that rule. But here's
we're exceptional, Brian.
American exceptionalism came up. And here's what caught our ear as one of the key parts of his remarks. First, on Syria, discussing what comes next after Assad said he would hand over chemical weapons and the role the U.N. can play, President Obama.
The Syrian government took a first step by giving an accounting of its stockpiles. Now there must be a strong Security Council resolution to verify that the Assad regime is keeping its commitments. And there must be consequences if they fail to do so. If we cannot agree even on this, then it will show that the United Nations is incapable of enforcing the most basic of international laws.
Now, who's the president talking to there? I thought he already had an agreement with Russia that a threat to use military force to enforce Syria's agreement to give up chemical weapons was not going to be in the UN resolution. The U.S. would hold out that threat separately. Am I mistaken?
You know, who exactly he's talking to is hard to gauge because he's making a general challenge to the UN, also obviously speaking to the Russians. But he's also – there were a lot of things in this speech that were talking to the American public and the world at large. There was something for everybody in the speech, which I think was a great speech actually, but it also was one that was hard to tell where you were going to go next from it because there were so many different things in it.
And I read that in Ban Ki-moon's address – he called for an enforceable and binding resolution on Syria's chemical weapons, even while saying that the solution to the problems in Syria is not military. So was Ban Ki-moon also calling for a threat of military force?
I highly doubt that Ban Ki-moon was calling for a threat of military force. The last thing the UN wants to do is actually to use military force or authorize military force in Syria.
So if he used the word enforceable, what other enforcement mechanism do you think he had in mind when it comes to Bashar al-Assad?
Oh, it's hard to say. There are various kinds of sanctions or prohibitions that could be brought into play. I think that to read too much into the actual wording of these things may be a mistake. I thought the president's speech had a lot of we must care about X but not forget Y, which were all very true but made it hard to know in practice whether you were going to support X or Y because he tried to fudge a lot of the trade-offs, which were legitimate in terms of the various different principles that the United States cares about and the various different interests that it has at stake. But since policy in practice involves balancing those things, he was very reluctant to say what you wouldn't do. And so I think that on Syria in particular, he was talking a much tougher game than, in fact, you're actually likely to see play out.
I'm still getting over the fact that you said not to pay too much attention to the words. Yeah, listen to their speeches except for the words parts. So here's the clip that may not make the headlines but is perhaps the most interesting thing President Obama said throughout this process. The president has been very careful to have a narrow focus on chemical weapons and not to take sides in the conflict. Though the U.S. also calls for an end to the Assad era. But he didn't want to talk about what comes next leading up to today. But in the speech today, he went to that more than I think I've heard him before. Take a listen.
The notion that Syria can somehow return to a pre-war status quo is a fantasy. It's time for Russia and Iran to realize that insisting on Assad's rule will lead directly to the outcome that they fear, an increasingly violent space for extremists to operate. In turn, those of us who continue to support the moderate opposition must persuade them that the Syrian people cannot afford a collapse of state institutions, and that a political settlement cannot be reached without addressing the legitimate fears and concerns of Alawites and other minorities.
So Gideon Rose, editor of Foreign Affairs magazine and author of the book How Wars End, what do you make of that clip? Is Obama starting to sketch out a vision for post-Assad Syria?
I don't think so. I think that's a kind of whistling past the graveyard passage, frankly. What I meant by don't take the word seriously is not that some of the words don't matter, but that it's hard to know in advance which of the words matter and which of them are boilerplate and which of them are misdirection. Sometimes if you're trying to withdraw from a war or extricate yourself from a war, like let's say we did in Iraq and we're now doing in Afghanistan, then you don't want to acknowledge the fact that you're walking away and the conflict will continue and there'll be a lot of turmoil and chaos when you leave. So you give a lot of happy talk about how wonderful things are going to be when in fact you don't believe it at all, and you also deny that you're walking away when that's what you're doing. In Syria, we may well be getting involved in a situation right now in which we're working with the Assad regime and the Russians and others to get rid of Syria's chemical weapons. But you're not going to get that without some kind of price being paid. And a lot of people feel or think or assume that one of the prices being paid for that is, in fact, a greater stability for the Assad regime. Certainly the rebels don't like this deal, and they're now the partner in their own disarmament. And presumably one of the things the Russians are getting is a backing off of strikes and a greater U.S. tolerance for Assad remaining in power. No one's going to talk about that because you want the president to save face. But basically, if that's indeed what's happening, if Assad is getting more legitimacy because of this deal rather than less, then you'd want to say the exact opposite in your speech to make everybody realize that that's not what's happening.
Oh, boy.
So you don't know until you see in practice what happens with the deal, whether this is bad for Assad or good for Assad.
So one other clip on Syria, words that are either direction or misdirection, from the Secretary General Ban Ki-moon, who spoke first today. And here he is reminding everybody that Syria is not just about chemical weapons.
But we can hardly be satisfied with destroying chemical weapons while the wider world is still destroying whole Syria. The vast majority of the killing and atrocities have been carried out with the conventional weapons. I appeal to all states to stop fueling the bloodshed and to end the arms flows to all the parties.
Appealing to other countries to end the arms flow through other countries. Is that mostly a very thinly veiled criticism of Iran, or is it broader than that?
I think it's broader than that, and it's also a pie in the sky. He may appeal. The question is whether anybody will listen to the appeal. They haven't so far. The countries who are basically using their proxies in Syria to fight a regional and sectarian civil war inside Syria are doing so for reasons that they consider important because of national interest or ideology or regional foreign policy. And they're not going to stop because an ineffectual UN Secretary General asks them to. They haven't stopped so far, and they're unlikely to do so in the future.
All right. The other big storyline at the meetings, Iran claiming that they will play nice and work to wind down their nuclear weapons efforts, or at least consider talking about it. Here again, President Obama.
Meanwhile, the Supreme Leader has issued a fatwa against the development of nuclear weapons, and President Rouhani has just recently reiterated that the Islamic Republic will never develop a nuclear weapon. So these statements made by our respective governments should offer the basis for a meaningful agreement. We should be able to achieve a resolution that respects the rights of the Iranian people while giving the world confidence that the Iranian program is peaceful.
President Obama speaking at the UN General Assembly just a short time ago. Gideon Rose, progress?
Absolutely. And but it's progress that is basically driven by what seems like progress on the Iranian side, and rightly so. Rouhani has basically adopted a much more moderate tone and maybe even some actual progress in his positions on the nuclear issue. This seems to be, at least for the moment, sanctioned by Supreme Leader Khamenei. We have a great profile on the current issue of foreign affairs on Khamenei, who remains the dominant political force in Iran. What he says goes. And so he seems to be backing at least some kind of opening now, possibly because of sanctions starting to bite. And the president is responding. It's going to be fascinating to see whether this actually moves forward. I hope it does. Just like on Syria, I hope the deal on the chemical weapons moves forward. We could be seeing something really, really interesting, which is we could be seeing the exact opposite in some ways of what we expected a couple of years ago. It seemed like the Arab Spring was the big story in the region, in which old regimes were being toppled. And new regimes, new democratic regimes or anti-authoritarian regimes were coming to the fore. And instead, in three different things this summer and fall, we're seeing maybe straws in the wind of the opposite. The restoration of the old guard in Egypt, with the United States tacitly backing the new regime, just like they tacitly backed Morsi, because they'll deal with whoever's in power in Egypt. We're seeing Assad maybe being saved a little bit, not just by gaining the upper hand, but by averting the strikes because of a chemical weapons deal. And we may be seeing the United States and Iran coming to a deal on nuclear weapons, which again would kind of legitimize and lock in the Iranian regime and the U.S. Not having a regime change policy to Iran. So the Green Movement history, the Syrian civil war may be settled ultimately on Assad's terms or at least partially a stalemate, and the old guard back in Egypt. It may be the big story is authoritarian resilience a few years from now, we look back on this, but with some deals cut that benefit Western and the world's interests.
And one of the potential dramas to look forward to this week or dread, or however we would anticipate it, is that we're told that perhaps Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu will argue in his speech at the UN that this whole Iranian proposal is a trap. So maybe we'll see another Netanyahu bomb chart prop like he had last year with a big red line. But we'll see if he kind of refutes what Obama was saying today. Before we run out of time, I do want to turn to the speech by the president of Brazil, Dilma Rousseff, who is really angry with the United States because of the revelations about the NSA. These come from the leaked documents from Edward Snowden about spying on Brazil. And just as a heads up to listeners, the UN likes to troll us radio producers by providing opposite gender translators. So this is a male voice over female President Rousseff's statement.
Meddling in such a manner in the life and affairs of other countries is a breach of international law, and as such, it is an affrontment to the principles that should otherwise govern relations among countries, especially among friendly nations. A country's sovereignty can never affirm itself to the detriment of another country's sovereignty. The right to security of a country's citizens can never be ensured by violating the fundamental human and civil rights of another country's citizens. Even worse, when private sector companies uphold this type of spying activity. The argument that illegal interception of information and data is allegedly intended to protect nations against terrorism is untenable. Mr. President, Brazil knows how to protect itself. Brazil, Mr. President, repudiates. Brazil tackles and does not provide shelter to terrorist groups. We are a democratic country.
And the president of Brazil, Dilma Rousseff, went on to ask the UN to create global legislation around these technologies and this spying. So we're just about out of time, Gideon, but in 30 seconds, has the U.S. created a firestorm with Brazil being kind of the spokes country for global NSA spying activities?
It's created a problem. I think the firestorm will die down over time. The real American exceptionalism is not, as Obama said, that we happen to care more, be more giving and more generous. It's that we have so much more power that we're in a position to do things for the world, for ourselves, that others can't do. And one of those things is protect everybody. So we use our unilateral power to do things we think are in our own and everybody else's best interests. But we don't often tell them, and sometimes they're secret and nasty things. And so in this case, what happened was a policy that we thought was necessary. We did in secret and didn't tell anybody. And now that it's revealed, a lot of people are annoyed. And this is the kind of unfortunate hypocrisy that liberal hegemony involves. You have to do things that violate your principles in order to uphold the overall system that supports those principles. The question of whether that kind of hypocrisy is possible in an age of leaks in which everything ultimately gets revealed remains to be seen.
Gideon Rose, editor of Foreign Affairs magazine and author of the book, How Wars End. Thanks for helping us listen to some of the directed words and some of the words of misdirection from the UN speeches today. Thanks.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, family lawyer Margaret Claw with stories of litigating relative on relative. Stay with us.